everybody. I'm Amy. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. I feel like we're, like, at some event here tonight. Like, there's going to be dinner and dancing and all the things with these lights. I just came from a wedding last weekend, so I don't know. I'm still in that mode. My sobriety date is August 10th, 2016. Last month, I just celebrated 5 years by the grace of God. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I also sponsor others. I guess I'll just jump right in myself. My mouth and my brain have not been communicating well today, so bear with me. We'll see how this goes. I started drinking when I was 12. I was 12 when I picked up at first. And my parents had kind of moved us around a little bit from California to Wisconsin, Wisconsin back to California. And by the time they moved us back to California, I was just in a really bad place. Like, I had been picked on a lot. I was this nerdy, skinny kid, glasses, bad perm, braces. I mean, you name it, I had it, and I was reminded of it on a daily basis. I mean, my mom had to cut gum out of my hair. I was shoved in lockers. I ate in the bathroom by myself at lunch, like, all of the things. So by the time I got back to California, like, I was just, I was over the goody-goody. I had the perm washed out. I got contacts, the braces came off, and it was like I was ready to find this new crowd of people who accepted me, the new me. And those new people were the ones that, you know, drank and did drugs. And I loved it. You know, my first drink was a vodka orange juice, and I can still remember where I was, who I was with, and the feeling that it gave me. Like, it gave me this undeniable peace. Like, things were just going to be okay. Everything was going to be okay. And, you know, I have never drank like a normie. I have always drank alcoholically. I had friends that would, like, share a four-pack of Fuzzy Navel, like, wine coolers, and I would be with the guys chugging Mad Dogs and 40s of Old E, like, with puke on my dress, one shoe, like, just rallying with the boys. Like, I have never drank... I've never drank like a lady. It's always been extremely uncomfortable for everyone else around me. So I drank on the weekends normally, but it started to kind of pick up a lot, actually. Usually, when I was like around 15, I started experimenting with harder drugs. I know this is AA, and I will keep it to a minimum, but drugs are the reason that I found AA the first time, so I'll keep it small. I was introduced to, we'll call it, powder beer when I was 15, and powder beer took me to a level that I never thought I would go down. My entire family is addicts. My mom and dad are normies, but uncles, grandfathers, great-grandfathers, like, you name it, we have addiction that just runs deep in our family. And so I've always known that I could have these, you know, these isms, but I always said it would never happen to me. It would never happen to me. I would never let it get that far. And when I found powder beer, I could no longer control any of it. By the time I was 17 years old and a couple months away from flunking out of high school, I was taken to my first rehab. While all my friends were going on senior trips to Mexico, I was checked into a rehab facility. I was able to finish high school there. I was able to finish, like, my GED credits. They had, like, a continuation school because I went to an adolescent rehab. And by the time I got out, you know, I admitted that I was a drug addict, but I would not admit that I was an alcoholic, because at that time, I was just doing what every normal 17-year-old was doing. I was drinking with my friends, and I was partying with my friends, and obviously at that time, like, I was hanging around with the exact same people that partied like me, so that was normal to me. So when I got out, I didn't do anything that was suggested. You know, they told me to go to meetings, and I went to a couple. Here's a caveat. I went to a couple, but I was high or drunk, and I would only go to candlelight meetings so that the lights would all be off, so I could be messed up and nobody would see me and I would be fine and I wouldn't have to lie to my parents and say, oh, I didn't go to a meeting. So I checked off all those boxes. I could still get messed up. I wouldn't have to lie to my parents. Like, I was in such denial of all these things. So I stayed manageable for a little while. But my alcoholism, you know, creeped back in and started to get pretty bad around the time that I was 22. I started blacking out regularly. Like, by the time I was 22, bars were already, like, we had already been getting into bars since we were 16. We were always, like, we were able to buy liquor from liquor stores when we were 16. Like, by the time we were 21, 22, like, it had lost its appeal. So we, you know, we partied at home. And started blacking out regularly then. I was also, you know, at that time in terrible relationship, you know, because obviously I had nothing to give to anyone else. So what I, you know, was putting out is exactly what I was getting back. So by the time I was 24, I was engaged to get married to a man who was cheating on me, who was beating me, who was also doing massive amounts of drugs and alcohol. Of course, the only way to, like, fix all of those problems was to, like, get married, because getting married solves everything. Just like when people think that having a baby, you know, would fix everything, like, that was me. I was always looking for love in all the wrong places. All the wrong places. You know, no man that spits in your face loves you, but I was so, so sick. So I was 24 when I got married, and it was about a year and a half later. I was drinking heavily daily. I mean, you want to talk about daily blackouts. I was in a daily blackout. I was also at this time, I had met a coworker who was down in Southern California who had had some hip surgery, you know, when she was younger. And so she had this doctor who would just send her mass amounts of, like, pills, pain pills. And so she became my best friend. And so she started shipping me up pain pills in curling irons from Southern California. I don't know why I couldn't find my own drug dealer in Northern California, but this was more fun or something. I don't know. So I would get curling irons full of pills sent to my house, and I was juiced. Like, it was my fun surprise for the day. So I don't know exactly what happened, but at 24 is when I attempted suicide. I remember waking up in a hospital bed the next day. I was handcuffed to a hospital bed because that's how they handle you there. And I was placed on a 5150 watch, which is like a Baker Act here. And so, you know, I talked to the doctor, and he said, you know, you really need to reevaluate your life. I was like, yeah, that's a really good idea. I need to reevaluate. I need to get rid of this man. This man is the issue. I am not the issue. It's this man. My parents ended up moving to Florida at this point, like, prior to, and he took one look at me when he came out to California, and he said, pack your bags. You're done. And I was pumped. I was like, geographical change. I can get away from this man. I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to drug. I'm not going to do any of these things. Like, here's my opportunity to change my life. I think it lasted about a week before I found a new guy bellied up to a bar doing cocaine. And I was like, ding, 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 ding. Like, here we go. And so started the cycle again. My alcoholism, I didn't think it could get worse, but it got worse. It got a lot worse in Florida. This person that I met, he reiterated the fact that in Florida, it's totally acceptable to drink in the mornings. Like, that's what Floridians do, is you just get drunk all day. And I was like, I finally found my place. Like, I am going to fit in with Florida just fine. What a mess. So I did. You know, my blackouts were daily, except this time I was drinking all day. And I've done, I've done everything that the big book talks about. Like, I've tried to switch from beer to liquor and to wine, and I've got to eat first. And, I've tried it all. I've tried self-help books. I've tried to run. I am not a runner because I've smoked cigarettes since I'm 18 years old. Like, I'm not a runner, but I've tried running. I've tried everything except for, take a real solid look at what the real problem is. So it was 2015. I suffered a miscarriage, and I found a really awesome doctor who happily prescribed me benzos. And at this time, I was drinking about a handle of vodka a day, and benzos. And so I lasted about 2 years. We lost our condo. We lost our condo and two alcoholics living under my parents' roof at 30-something years old was not a good look. And so again, I was always pointing the finger at this guy. It was always his fault. It was always his fault. It was never my fault. And so, once I finally got rid of him, the problem was still there. And I couldn't, blame anyone for the empty bottles anymore, so I had to get super creative, on where I put my empties. There was a lot of hot booze in the car. There was a lot of laundry basket booze. There was a lot of cheese drawer, is what I called it, cheese drawer booze, because I'm the shortest one, so nobody would, get that low in the refrigerator. So I would put it in the cheese drawer behind all the cheese. I would just get wild and creative. I don't know. So at this time, let's fast forward a little bit. It was July of 2016. I was Baker acted twice within 2 weeks. Not my best month of my life. Baker acted twice within 2 weeks, and each time I did 5 days in the psych ward. And the second time I got out, I was living in my car. I had no family left. Nobody was talking to me. I had no friends left. I remember that there was this discharge nurse who said that she had called a place for me, and I was like, well, that's intrusive. You don't know my life. It's really rude of you, actually, to just go ahead and take it upon yourself to call a treatment facility. I know. Rude. And I was, God, I was in Largo. I was at a bank. I was in a Bank of America parking lot, just slugging on a bottle of vodka, in my car. And this treatment facility called me, and he was like, I had this nurse call me, and she was telling me about your life. I'm like, she doesn't know me. She doesn't know what's going on with me. And he's like, well, why don't you tell me about what's going on? And I was, I legitimately said out loud and believed it. Like, I'm fine. I'm living in my car. I've got no family. I've got no friends. My life is literally going to hell. And I'm still lying to myself, and I'm still lying to other people and saying, I'm fine. I'm going to be okay. I can get through this. I can get through this. I can't tell you exactly what happened because I blacked out. But I somehow ended up at this treatment facility the next day. I walked in and blew a .35, and they said, off to detox you go. So I got shipped off to another facility, which was awesome. I shared a room with two schizophrenics who fought with each other all night. I'd never want to go back to Newport Richie. No offense if that's where y'all are from, but it was not a great experience for me. So anyways, I ended up finally getting back into this treatment facility, and, you know, they start telling you, like, you've got to get a higher power, and you've got to, you know, talk to God, and I wanted nothing to do with God. I came in with a punishing God. Like, God was always doing these things to me, you know, just an entitled little brat. And I didn't grow up with religion. We were, I heard somebody call it Christmas Christians. Like, we were those people that showed up on Christmas and, like, sat front row, like, we were there every day of the year. But that was us. We were never there. So, you know, they start talking about you need to get a higher power, you need to find, they didn't say you need to find God, but that's what I heard, is you need to find God. And I was like, great, here we go. Like, I'm in, you know, church camp. And so I think it was about 2 weeks in, and I was like, okay, I'm going to try this. Like, I keep talking to my therapist. She keeps pushing this praying thing. Everybody is pushing this praying thing, and I'm just going to do it. I'm going to try it tonight. And so I lay down in bed, and I just, like, looked at the ceiling and was like, yo, like, bro, whoever you are, you know, whatever you are, if you're real, show me, you know, like a cocky little ass. If you're real, show me. And I swear to God, not 2 minutes later, my roommates started screaming at the top of their lungs. And I was like, this is interesting. You know, what's this about? And so I open the door, and I run down the hallway, and there's this massive bullfrog, like, jumping across the living room floor. And I was like, holy shit, that's God. Like, God is here. God is for me. Don't touch the frog. That's God. God, the frog is mine. Like, y'all don't touch my frog. And I later learned that the acronym for frog is fully rely on God. And so frogs have been, like, this massive part of my recovery. I love when I get frog gifts, because it just reminds me, like, God's looking out for me. And yeah, my bullfrog, I will never forget that day. So I did 30 days, and I remember speaking at my first year and saying, like, this was the hardest year ever. And I look back now and I'm like, dude, that was the easiest year ever. Like, I literally only I would go to 3 meetings a day. I would go at 8 a.m., I would go to an 11 a.m. or a noon, and I would go to a 7 or an 8 p.m. I would drink massive amounts of Dunkin', like, massive amounts of Dunkin'. I'm surprised I don't have hair on my chest, because, I mean, it was foul. Smoke cigarettes, we played cards. Like, we literally only had to stay sober. And we talk about it with my friends all the time. Like, that was the best days of our life. Like, legitimately just don't pick up a drink. You know, sobriety has been, I put down the drink and I expected life to be butterflies and rainbows, you know, just like, life is great. Everything's going to be fine because I'm no longer drinking. It's been a lot of work. It has been a lot of work. My baby brother, who, he's 4 years younger than me. It has always been us. Just the two of us, ride or die. Like, he is just, he's my baby brother, but he's a foot and a half taller than me. He calls me Smalls. We have just been this awkward little pair, like, forever. And he did not talk to me until I had 2 years sober. And it wrecked me. I wanted that so bad. As soon as I got out of treatment, I went on a 2016 Amy apology tour, is what I call it, because I just started apologizing to everybody. Like, hey, I'm sorry I, you know, did this. Hey, I'm sorry I did this. And my sponsor was like, you gotta stop. Like, the steps are in order for a reason. And I finally listened, you know, and I did the steps, and, sorry. When I finally did the steps, you know, I was pumped, because I was told that this is where, you know, the relief was coming, was in the steps. And I wanted that. Like, I wanted what my sponsor had. Like, I wanted that peace. I wanted just the calmness that she had. And so I was gung-ho about it. Like, I had so many people in early recovery with me like, oh, I'm not going to do my four step. I just don't want to do my four step. I'm like, fuck that. I want to get this shit done. Like, I just want to get it over with. I don't want to feel this way anymore. I want to feel better. And so I did. Like, I flew through the steps. I started sponsoring people immediately. I remember that I had my first sponsee, and I called my sponsor, and I was like, I'm done sponsoring. I had one. It was nice. I don't want to do it again. She's a pain in the ass. I don't want it. Like, I don't want it. And she was like, well, then I can't sponsor you. I'm like, oh, fine. So I kept going. And I've learned a lot. They have taught me more than anything over the years. And my favorite part about this program is watching the light come back on in somebody else's eyes. Like, to see a gray, frail woman come in just lost and scared, and then to see her, you know, with color and plump and sponsoring other women and just having this light in her eyes, like, that is my favorite part of this program. And I am thoroughly grateful for sponsorship and sponsees. Like, they definitely have saved me along the years. And one of my favorite things that has happened in sobriety, the list is truly endless, but I was I was diagnosed with infertility after the miscarriage in 2015, and around my two-year anniversary, I started dating this guy, and but I waited a year. I truly did before I started dating, so I at least kept that promise to myself. Shiny squirrel, sorry. Okay, so 2 years, started dating this guy. Great guy, sober, all the good things. And not a month in, I found out I was pregnant. Like, I had gone through different treatments and pills and all these things, and nothing ever stuck. And God said, now is your time. And he proposed immediately, and I said no. Oh, I said, absolutely not. This is not 1950. I don't even know what is happening right now, but we're just going to get through this together, and we're going to see how this works out. We got married in December. We eloped. We have a beautiful, beautiful little girl who is insane and sassy and incredible. And, you know, we're saving for either a college fund or a rehab fund. We don't know yet, but we're just saving regardless. I'm truly grateful for, you know, the women that I have met in this program. This year has been the hardest. This year has been the hardest for me. I have gone through a lot of emotional tribulations. Tribulations? What? I said that? Okay. I've gone through a lot of things this year that has to do with my emotional sobriety. I was diagnosed with anxiety and depression at a very young age. I've been on medication for a very long time. I know that it is an outside issue, but, like, I have to say this. Because about a month before my 5-year anniversary, I said out loud, I either want to drink or I want to die. Like, and that was real. It's been a really tough year mentally for me. And, I did everything that the program told me to do. I kept going to meetings. I kept reaching out. I kept telling people where I was at. And it was not getting better. It was getting worse. And so I did seek outside help, thank God. And I'm still here today. But, you know, that emotional... The emotional aspect of sobriety is a difficult one. It's a difficult one to grasp onto, and it's definitely been a learning lesson for me this year. There has been... Thank you. I forgot to say thank you the first time. There's been a lot of people that I have lost along the way. And, you know, when I first came in, you know, people talk about, you know, stepping over dead bodies. And I used to think how morbid of a saying that was. Like, that's so sick. How can you say that? Like, it's cold and heartless, but it's true. You know, my best friend had 15 months sober and died of a heroin overdose. You know, I've had really great people in my life die from this disease. And at a very young age, like, I started seeing people die 18, 19, 20 years old. So this is unfortunately nothing new for me, but it's definitely, you know, a way of life that I want to continue with. And I'm grateful that my, you know, my husband and my partner is also sober, and, you know, our baby's going to grow up in a sober house. Like, you know, we have big books all over, and, you know, I was talking to her tonight. She's two. She doesn't understand. Like, but she asked me where I was going, and I said, you know, mommy's going to go to a meeting. And, she said, I want to go to a meeting. I'm like, well, we'll hold off for a little while. We don't know if you need those yet, but, like, you know, I want to reiterate to her that, like, this is what mommy and daddy need. Like, this is what we need in order for us to be a family, and in order for us to be good people in society. Like, mommy and daddy need their meetings. And, you know, I don't want to be ashamed to talk to my kid about alcohol and drugs, because it wasn't discussed with me as much as I think it should have been when I was growing up. It probably wouldn't have scared me because I was afraid of nothing. But, you know, I'm proud to be, you know, a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember at one point in early sobriety, somebody had introduced themselves as, like, a grateful recovering alcoholic. And I was like, what in the hell is wrong with this person? Like, how are you grateful to be an alcoholic? It made absolutely no sense to me. But today it makes sense. You know, I am a grateful sober alcoholic. And, you know, without these steps, without sponsorship, without the women in these rooms who have done everything to keep me afloat this year, I'm forever grateful. So, that's all I got tonight. So thanks, guys. I appreciate it.